Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Then you've come to the right place. You're listening to the My Accountant Handles That podcast, presented by The Quantify Group, the podcast that covers all aspects of running the financial side of your business. And now, your hosts, longtime CPAs, Dave Ashworth and Alex Steinberg.
Welcome to the My Accountant Handles That podcast. I am your co-host, Dave Ashworth, and I am here with my other co-host, my business partner, Alex Steinberg. Alex, what's going on, man?
And welcome, everybody. Another fun day, another fun podcast. I love it. Got great guests again.
We do. We have another great guest. So
keep pulling it off, Dave. I don't know how you do it, but you're doing it.
So let's just dive in. So I'm going to introduce our guest today. Our guest is John Vogel. I'm going to read a quick bio. We'll intro him, and then I'll kind of have him talk a little bit more about himself and his company. But let's get into his bio quick. So John Vogel is a Philadelphia entrepreneur and marketer. He's earned his bachelor's in entrepreneurship from Rowan University and an MBA in marketing from Drexel. He's the co-founder and principal of 215 Marketing, a lifestyle marketing agency in Philadelphia. He's also an adjunct professor of marketing at Rowan University and sits on the alumni board of directors for Rowan University. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Alex. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So definitely. I know that was a pretty brief bio there. So why don't you maybe just talk a little bit more about yourself and tell us a little more about 215 Marketing, how that got started, and the type of work that you guys do.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. Just a quick background on me. I won't go too far from the bio, but I did graduate from Rowan back in 2011 with an undergraduate degree in entrepreneurship, went on to Drexel to complete my MBA program in 2013. And at Drexel, that is where I met my business partner, Garrett Gillen, and we co-founded 215 Marketing almost 7 years ago now. Just backstory on how that started. We met first day of our MBA program, as fortuitous as that could be. We became social friends. We were studying together, dealing with 4 or 5 hour homework assignments, as graduate programs will make you do. And Garrett was freelance marketing. I was working as a marketer for a biotech company. It's actually our client now, funny story. Mm-hmm. And we eventually decided, like, hey, listen, we're going to go work as consultants in a year and a half, 2 years when we're done. Let's make some money on the side, get our hands dirty in marketing strategy and see what happens. So fortunately, through our networks, we had some opportunities to craft some marketing strategy. And then what happened, and we were not planning for this, is people were like, great, I love this concept. I love the tactics you're proposing. Can you execute on them? And at the time, Garrett and I had limited tactical experience, but of course we said yes. We wanted to make money and do well by our clients. Yep. And we self-taught ourselves SEM, SEO, websites. We relied on contractors when we could. And essentially out of Bayada Institute, which was an incubation space at Drexel, we launched 215 Marketing. As they say, the rest is history. We eventually, within a year of graduating, we moved into our first office. We've grown, from a small little startup to, $3+ million a year company, which isn't crazy big, but it's big enough. And we've just been going ever since. And as far as what we do and who we are, from a business perspective, we offer marketing, sales, and technology consulting and strategy. And that's really laying the foundation and groundwork for what we need to do and why. And then tactically speaking, what we specialize in is digital advertising, website design and development, email marketing, and analytics and attribution. And analytics and attribution is really where we've made a difference in our market space and with our clients. It's helping them understand the return on marketing spend, which historically has been a massive gap for small mom and pop pizza shops through institutional and organizational clients that are Fortune 500, Fortune 5000. So that's really our bread and butter. And really what separates us per se from a lot of our clients or a lot of our competitors, is we're not a cookie cutter shop. So there's a lot of marketing companies that say, hey, listen, for $500 a month, you get A, B, and C. And for $1,000 a month, we'll throw D, E, and F on top for you. And that's not how we operate. Everything we do is custom for each of our clients. There's no monthly term contracts. There's no monthly minimums. We're very transparent across the board. And everything we do is just to meet the specific business objectives of the clients. And I think there's a big difference in today's day and age of being a marketer that understands marketing and being a business person that understands marketing. You know, marketing is becoming instrumental in the operational side of companies and operational decisions. And if you're not bridging the gap between marketing, finance, operations, sales, so on and so forth, you know, the company's doing itself a disservice. So we really try to provide a full service solution for our clients and do right by them when we can.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And you're right. I mean, marketing is really tied into pretty much every piece of the business. It has to be, you know, if you want to have success. So that makes a lot of sense. Before we kind of dive into some more questions, what are the type of clients that you guys work with? Are you working with small companies, large companies, kind of everything in between, or what are your typical clients look like?
Yeah, it's everything in between. You know, we are vertically agnostic, so we can work with a startup that just got backed by a venture capitalist. We can work with a $1 million local, you know, construction company, or we can work with a $250 million international B2B company. I'd say we are trending more towards larger B2B companies just because of their specific needs as it relates to our skill set and, you know, what we're best at. But we really do work with a wide variety of clients. As long as they understand the progressive nature of marketing, they have money to fuel their marketing strategies and campaigns, we don't mind working with them.
Got it. That makes sense. So we kind of talked about, you know, how and why you started your business, but obviously you guys haven't been around, you know, in the grand scheme of things, super long, but you've had a lot of success in that short period of time. What would you say has led to your success in building your business up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, it's being transparent and honest with our clients. Marketing gets a bad reputation of, like, you know, gimmicky salesmen that promise the world and underdeliver consistently. And we still fight that stigma to this day in our industry. But I really think, you know, it's our approach to tracking everything we do down to the minute, reporting across the board on what each thing's going to cost them, and being transparent and honest, even if issues do occur with our clients, they appreciate that. I'd say the second thing that's really stood out and has helped us succeed is Garrett and I, like I said before, are business people that picked marketing. We're not, for example, graphic designers trying to learn business. And that is a massive difference in our space, especially for our clients. We speak the language of both sides of that coin. And when you're dealing with CEOs and COOs that don't understand marketing, but understand business, that's paramount in finding success for that client. And I think, you know, Garrett and I both really pride ourselves on being able to have those conversations and tie back in what we're doing from a marketing standpoint to operational and business goals.
Yep. No, that makes a ton of sense. So let's kind of dive into some of the financial aspects of things.
Sure.
You know, with running your business, I know that you kind of handle that side of the business. So I want to kind of talk about some of those things. So, I guess the first thing would be, we talked about, you know, the success that you've had. But how do you guys specifically measure success? I know it's different for everybody. Some people are just looking at top line revenue. Some people are looking at, you know, the bottom line. Some people are looking at all sorts of metrics in between. And I just like to hear from different business owners who have had that level of success is how they're measuring it in their specific business.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something we consistently challenge ourselves with, is what defines success from a quantifiable standpoint financially. Yep. I'd say there's a few things that we look at the macro level. Obviously, net income matters. And on a monthly basis, total service revenue in matters to us. That's just, yep, you know, foundational for almost any business. But I'd say one of the key metrics we look at on a daily basis is what we call produce service cash on hand. So essentially how we operate, we work with in a retainer model, similar to how a law firm works. So someone gives us a deposit of, let's say, $10,000. We bill against it at our hourly rate, whatever that may be for the specific client. Mm-hmm. And we go through, and when that retainer gets exhausted, we request a refill. So what's challenging about that is you may have money in your bank account, but you don't know how much of it you've actually produced. So you don't know what's quote unquote freed up cash to move to savings or invest or hire or whatever it may be. So I'd say one of the core things, I created a custom sheet to do this, is measuring that produced service cash on hand. So at any point in day in time, I know how much money we have freed up. per se, to invest, to hire, to do whatever. And yep. that's made a massive difference in our business. It's not only helped us, you know, grow and scale, but it's helped us avoid cash flow bubbles and gaps, which most service businesses find at any given point in time. Most businesses in general have those issues.
Sure.
So we've really been able to get ahead of those. And that's been paramount to our success. It's as close as we can get in our space to having true visibility to a, not just a macro performance standpoint, but on a daily basis, I know how we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah. I had a question with regards to what you just stated there. How do you work with your, either your outside account or your accounting team to produce this information on a timely basis for you to analyze?
No, that's a great question. And I'll get into the accounting structure right after I answer the question. So essentially what happens, we have a daily cash flow mapping sheet, right? So every day of every month, we've mapped out in a sheet. We've segmented out on that sheet what's coming in from a service revenue standpoint, what expenses are fixed going out or variable expenses going out. And then what we're really doing is we're totaling up how much money we have on hand for our clients, minusing out the total amount of that money that's been produced. And that essentially gives us the number, which is what I'm calling produced service cash on hand. In addition, obviously, we have our savings account and stuff like that that shows up on the sheet, but it doesn't factor into the produced service cash on hand. So just an example, let's say we have, you know, $100,000 cash on hand from retainer deposits, and we've billed out, you know, $75,000 to those, right? That's how much is left remaining. $25,000 mm-hmm. is what we have free that I can move to savings, that I can invest with, that I can do many different things with.
Yep.
And again, it's just another layer of visibility. And it was one of the biggest challenges we faced for 3 to 4 years. And part of why we actually switched from a fixed price billing model to the retainer model is for this reason.
Yep. No, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that don't see a ton of businesses of that level of detail. But if you really want to manage your cash flow, I mean, that's, you know, how you need to be doing it. So kudos to you guys for having that level of detail and looking at it on a daily basis. Alex, you have something?
Yeah, I was going to ask too, on top of those metrics that you used, are there any specific other reports that you guys produce? I mean, obviously there's like a balance sheet, P&L. Is there anything else that you look at in conjunction with that to figure out what's going on?
On a recurring basis, I'm always tracking our monthly P&L just to see where we're at and, you know, what we're trending for. That obviously comes into play. But one of the things I look at that isn't necessarily accounting software, but it's accounting related, it is our time tracking software. And that's where I can pull the data from how much money we produce on any given day or at any given point in time in a day or in a week, month, year, so on and so forth. And that's actually the first metric we pull to calculate that produced service cash on hand. So it's a combination of macro deposit data from QuickBooks meets that time tracking software. And that software is actually called Harvest.
Okay. Yep. I've heard of that. I've heard a lot of good things about that. I don't know if we've used it much, but I do know some people that use it and have a lot of good things to say, especially in a business like yours. I mean, keeping track of your time is obviously super important. So to have a tool like that, you know, at your fingertips is huge. It's huge.
Yeah, it is the business tracking time. So,
right, you know, it is. Yeah.
And honestly, it's not that it's less important, but it matters more to our clients that want visibility and transparency into what we're doing and what it costs them on a rolling basis more than it matters to us. Because we can always do the macro reporting at the end of the month, but them having access to that data is key.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that transparency is huge. You know, clients love to see, you know, exactly what they're paying for, right? And if you have good time tracking, you're able to produce that for them at any time. And that level of transparency with clients and customers definitely goes a long way. So you mentioned this before, but kind of want to dive into this, you know, the accounting infrastructure in your business. How have you built that out? How have you kind of separated duties? I know you, sounds like you handle some of it, but what other pieces are you using? What other, you know, professionals externally, internally are using? How did you build that out? And I guess, you know, on top of that, why you build it the way that you did?
Right. Well, why actually was primarily born out of necessity and then a need for efficiency, because there's only so many hours in the day and I couldn't do it anymore. Right. So as far as our accounting infrastructure is concerned, software wise, we use QuickBooks Online. That's our bread and butter accounting software. Harvest is a time tracking software that we use, again, to aggregate the time. And then we've created custom Google Sheet templates for account reporting and things like that, cash flow sheet reporting, just so we have visibility into it. Now, how it works from a human capital side of things is, I guess I am at the top level overseeing the finance. I don't actually do a lot on a day-to-day basis outside of check-in to make sure everything's kosher. I'm no longer tactically making any reconciliations or pulling reports. It's all just there for me to view. It's already done. Our outsourced accountant, he and his staff, they handle ongoing reconciliation. They handle finalizing monthly reports. I have a call with them every 2 to 4 weeks, depending on what time of year it is, and regarding tax payments, things of that nature. And then internally, each of our account managers obviously track their time. That's their contribution. And then our internal billing team handles updating that cash flow sheet, making sure that any accounts payable or accounts receivable is handled, and they handle all ongoing billing. So when a new invoice needs to go out or we need to get paid back for something, they're handling all of that logistically. So I'm more, you know, 10,000 foot view, making sure that I's are dotted, T's are crossed. And between the accountant, the softwares, and our internal team, it pretty much takes care of itself.
Yep. No, that's great. I mean, obviously that's, you know, we offer the, you know, similar services, the outsourced accounting services. So we're obviously huge proponents of that model, which is great. But talk to me a little bit. I don't know when you guys, you know, kind of decided to utilize the outsourced accounting model, but maybe if you could just, you know, talk to us briefly on what brought you to kind of make that decision to outsource that piece of your business. And then what type of things were you looking for when you were choosing an accountant for that and going through that process?
Yeah, and I'll talk about why, and then I'll talk about, you know, the current situation we find ourselves in as well. You know, so we actually made that decision almost from day one. The reality of it is, in today's day and age, you should spend your time doing things you're good at and avoid spending time on things you're not. And we're willing to pay for someone that's good at something because you're either paying for it or you're paying for it. It's one of my favorite sayings. So we knew from day one, I don't know accounting well enough. I understand QuickBooks. I could reconcile. It's not worth the 3 hours to go through and do it every so often. So, you know, for almost 6 years, we've used that outsourced accounting firm to handle like the day-to-day reconciliation and, you know, the monthly reporting, tax things and things of that nature. You know, one of the gaps we found, and we use our accountant for this, we use an outsourced CFO for this every now and again. And one of the things we always seek in an outsourced accounting firm is, okay, what else can we be doing, right? And it's almost when we deal with our clients, we say, what are your objectives? How do we help you get to your objectives using marketing as a vehicle, right? And in finance, it's tough because, okay, we know what our objectives are. Maybe we want to hire, maybe we want to buy a property, maybe we want to do all these different things, but who handles those recommendations? Is it the accountant saying, hey, listen, there's this gray area with IRS tax law. Let's see if we can exploit this. Is it your financial planner that says, hey, this is how we should move your money around and let's have your accountant execute that? That's a never-ending conversation of how you can just increase efficiency and maximize the dollars coming in and dollars coming out from a tax standpoint, you know, to make your business as profitable as possible. And that's still a gap that I believe exists in the industry. And I don't mean marketing, I mean the accounting financial realm, because those two worlds really do need to be integrated with one another. And maybe they are to some degree. I just haven't found the perfect solution there. And that's okay. It's okay that there's no perfect solution. But I think the most important thing from an outsourced accounting perspective, outside of, I use this term literally, dotting I's and crossing T's, is making proactive recommendations to reduce tax liability, especially for a small business, especially for small business owners. You know, what should we be doing or what should we not be doing to reduce our net profit or increase, you know, the amount of money we can take out of a business without paying more taxes. I think that is a critical thing, especially for small business owners. Nobody wants to get hit with a $40,000 tax bill at the end of a good year. You know, that's a quick wake-up call. So I think that's really key. And the challenge with that is the tax code changes very quickly, and there's a lot of ambiguity. You know, I've even read up on a lot of things, and there's a lot of gray areas. You don't know which way it's going to go. And accountants traditionally want to play everything by the book, as they should. That's their job, to look out for their client's best interest. You know, but sometimes there are opportunities where you have to take a chance and hope for the best, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Yeah, sometimes you, like you said, you have to take a position there that is, you know, still under the law, but it's something that you can support. And I think you made a great point too. It obviously, tax is a a huge expense for a business. And so it's important to monitor that. And the proactive piece is something that we hear a lot too, is, you know, other accountants that, you know, we're working with our clients now, they weren't being proactive. They weren't bringing recommendations to the table. They were just a little more reactive. They were waiting for the client to come to them with a question or an issue. And that's something that we, you know, us as a business have made it a point to be very proactive, because we've just heard that over and over again. And the reality is, you know, if you're working with a, you know, an outsourced accounting firm, you know, you hired them to be the experts on that, and you shouldn't really be going to them with questions and concerns. They should be coming to you, because that's kind of why you hired them. So that makes a lot of sense, you know, because we do hear that a lot, that proactive piece is something that's really important. Really important.
Yeah. And I think in most service businesses, whether you're an accounting firm, a marketing agency, a construction company, I think being able to be proactive and properly communicate what's going to happen when and why is the key to success. I philosophically, no matter the service business you have, I think that that principle holds true. Now, not every client will let you be proactive, and maybe you shouldn't work with that type of client. But at the end of the day, everybody wants to be told what to do to some degree in an area that they are not an expert in.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. So this next question, I know that you guys are, you know, you're pretty young, and you probably have a long way to go here, and you want to, you know, continue to build. But I think something that is important is to build your business for succession, whatever that looks like, whether that's passing that down to somebody, whether that's some sort of an exit strategy someday. And we see a lot of businesses that kind of get to the end, so to speak, and then they start to plan. And at that point, it's kind of too late a little bit. You know, it's, hey, I want to sell my business in the next 6 months. What can I be doing? It's like, well, you kind of should have been thinking about that for the past, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, building it so that when you get to this point, you're ready. So like I said, I know you guys are younger. You probably are still have a long way to go on your journey of building your business. But what type of things do you guys think about? And what type of things are you doing to kind of prepare your business for succession, specifically if you can, from a financial standpoint. So when that day comes, you're prepared, but you also can maximize the value of your exit or whatever your succession plan looks like.
Yeah, no, and there's a few different ways to answer the question, but I'll try to stay as financially relevant as possible. I mean, I think the first thing that has to happen financially is just creating processes to take the X's and O's away from the business owners or the, you know, strategic leaders of the business and putting them in the hands of other people you trust. So I think processes is first. I think second, and almost part of processes, is having the right software so you can spend less time looking into different things on an ongoing basis. I think that's obviously paramount. And then financially, you know, for us at least, Garrett and I really don't want to necessarily sell this business. The reason we wanted to start a marketing agency outside of producing marketing solutions is we're serial entrepreneurs. We own a few other businesses. We want to use our own organization as a vehicle for success for other companies. And we're not there yet. And obviously it's not as autonomous as we'd like it to be. But we really don't want to sell our agency per se. We want our agency to be able to run without us. And we're getting somewhat closer to that point on a daily basis. And we want to be able to plug our own ideas into a machine and have that machine spit out a profitable company. And that's part of the long-term vision, you know. And then on the other side of it, and, you know, I'm also not naive to think that if someone came along and made an offer for a company, what would they be looking for? And how would we evaluate ourselves?
The God, you know, it's always the Godfather offer, right? You never know.
Always. You never know. Exactly. So essentially how it works for us is what people care about is obviously what's your net profit, what's your monthly revenue, so on and so forth. But what they really care about is committed money via term contracts, whether it's an advertising agreement, website, so on and so forth. So if we ever were to go down that path of looking for that, looking to sell or exit, we would switch our billing model. We would try to sign up some of our, you know, valued clients to those term type contracts down the line. And that would be the easiest way to increase our valuation and exit if we wanted to.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned a really good point that I think a lot of people miss the boat on is having the processes in place to where, you know, you guys don't, as the owners, you don't have to be super involved, because a lot of people, and we've talked about this before on other podcasts, but a lot of people, the value of the business is in them. And when they leave, the business doesn't really have any value because no one else can do it except them. So I think building out those processes, allowing other people that you trust to really take control of that. And then when you guys leave or kind of start to step away, you know, even if you choose not to leave, you just kind of step away. The business is still running and still doing fine. And that's where the real value comes in a business. So I think that's just a great point that we keep kind of hearing over and over again. So,
yeah. And it's extremely hard to do. I don't know if there's a harder thing to do in business, especially a service business, because on one side of it, like, it's your baby. You want to make sure you see everything, control everything, touch everything. So that's hard. But also, you know, it's just, you're concerned that people aren't going to do it the exact same way as you. And stepping away is hard. It is not easy. And I want to say this objectively. It's a never-ending process, and I don't know if it fully ever is perfect, right? Because you can never truly replicate yourself, but you need to put your people in the best place to succeed. And to that point, you know, the key to succession, or what we're trying to do, we're trying to hire the best people we can. Because at the end of the idea, any successful business or organization, no matter how efficient, how many wonderful software tools you have, how you know, how productive you are, if you don't have great people, it's never going to work.
No, so true.
At the root of it all is great people. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, no, it makes complete sense. You know, and like you said, people are never going to, you can't replicate yourself. People aren't going to do it exactly how you want to do it. Now, sometimes they're going to do it better, and sometimes they might not do it better. They might do it worse, but it's probably not going to be exactly the same. And that's okay a lot of times. But as long as they're kind of following the process and generally doing it like you want the business to run, that's okay. But definitely hard to kind of step away from that for sure. It's not an easy thing. Much easier just saying it than actually executing on it. But that is 100%. The way to do it.
Yeah, that's the perfect model, but it's hard.
It is.
As everyone that's ever been in that situation for a few days or 30 years knows, it's hard.
Yep, for sure. So I have two final questions, and they're kind of just on the opposite sides of it. So I'll start with the first one. So, you know, you guys have been in business for some time now, and any business owner has had financial struggles or some sort of struggles for the most part at some point with something. So maybe if you can, just touch on one of your biggest financial struggles, you know, as an owner, and what you did to overcome that.
Yeah. Without going into too much detail, long story short, in our second or third year, I can't even remember, we were working with a very large institutional size client. They had racked up over $150,000 in AR. They promised the world. We trusted the people. They never paid. We had to take them to court. It took, you know, 18 months of legal documents and subpoenas and a bunch of stuff. We eventually got the money back, but like I said, it took almost 2 years from when the debt was originally owed. You know, when you're a company at that point that was only doing, you know, $1 million and change, you know, it was 10% of our annual revenue more.
Yeah, that hurts.
So it hurts. It was a massive hurdle. And really what we did is we took on, you know, low interest capital. We infused some of our own money into the company to make sure that it would, you know, sustain and be able to continue. And we persevered. The easiest way to say it, you know, we were as efficient and lean as possible. We were able to make it through. We were able to pay back everything. And we turned out on the other side much wiser for the mistakes we made during that process. But yeah, that was by far the biggest financial challenge we faced, is someone up. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, yeah, that's tough to deal. What would you say is the biggest thing you learned from that? And like, I'm sure that you, after that, you made some changes in your business, but what would you say is like the biggest lesson learned and change that you made moving forward to maybe not run into that issue again? And I know you can't avoid it at times, like that stuff that happens as part of running business, but I'm sure that you did some things or one thing to kind of avoid that in the future.
You know, I think the biggest thing we learned financially specifically, and everybody's dealt with, oh, I'll pay that next week, I'll get to it Friday, I'll pay it soon, is actions speak louder than words. And the sooner you call someone out and quote unquote force them to make a decision, whether it's paying or going to trial, the better off you are. And it's not always a negative thing. And you just have to remove emotion from the situation. And that was the biggest issue we faced. And what we didn't do is we trusted maybe when we shouldn't have. We had the legal contractual means in place to do whatever we wanted to do, but we trusted someone because they were, that was someone we relied on, and it helped our business grow as we had helped theirs. But when push came to shove, they didn't pay, and we should have started that process 90 days before we did. So the biggest lesson we learned is actions speak louder than words. And when you're speaking about finance, you need to remove emotion from the equation. It's an objective pillar of business for a reason.
That makes sense. Makes sense. So now on the flip side of things, maybe this one is a little easier to talk about usually. But one of your biggest financial victories, something that was just something you're really proud of from a financial standpoint, and what attributed to that?
You know, I don't know if there's one specific thing. You know, I can name a few smaller things. You know, having 6 or 7 months run for your business to burn in your savings account is nice. I'm very proud of that. You know, never having missed a payroll as a service business is something I'm proud of. You know, it is being able to, you know, donate back to 501c3s and nonprofits. Mm-hmm. You know, in the Philadelphia and tri-state areas, it always feels good. You know, but I'd say the biggest financial victory for us overall, just as we've grown as a company, is being able to pay our talented employees more and more as the company grows. You know, we're not Comcast, where we're sitting here at the end of the year and being like 3% raise plus this bonus based on our net profit. That's just not how we operate. You know, there's been years where we've given the same employee 3 raises in 12 months. And the reason I'm bringing that up financially is just seeing the impact you can have on people's lives from starting your own organization and being a financially stable company. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to my business partner. And that's probably what I'm proudest of. I don't know if that's a victory or not, but I'll call it a victory for the sake of this conversation.
No, that definitely is. That's awesome. That's awesome. It's cool to see companies out there rewarding people, because like it kind of goes back to our, you know, conversation earlier about, you know, our people that we hire is what really can drive our success. And so recognizing that, a lot of people say that, but they don't necessarily recognize it. But the fact that you guys are able to recognize it actually from a financial standpoint, is just really cool to see. So, that's really good stuff from you guys on that.
We try.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all you could do sometimes too. Just kind of do your best, but that's awesome. That's awesome. Alex, you have any final questions here that you want to ask John before we hop off?
No, I think you guys covered everything, and it was very great to have you on, John. Very informative.
Yeah, yeah, thank you, John.
I appreciate it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. Before you go, real quick, if you wouldn't mind, just quickly again, kind of run through some of the things that you guys handle at 215 Marketing, just so people out there can hear in case they're looking for something. And then also the best way for people to get in touch with you.
Yeah. So you can find us at 215marketing.com, straightforward website. And as far as what we do a lot of marketing, sales, and technology consulting from a strategic standpoint. And from a tactical execution standpoint, we specialize in digital advertising, paid search, display, and social, website design and development, a lot of email marketing, both traditional and cold outreach. We deal with a lot of CRM projects to help people sales funnels and create efficiencies. And then analytics and attribution, helping people understand the return on their marketing spend.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Well, thank you again, John. We appreciate it. And we look forward to just seeing you guys having continued success, seeing you continue to grow, and just the impact that you guys will have on businesses and just, you know, the Philadelphia area in general. It's cool to see, and we're excited to continue to follow along with your journey.
No, likewise, guys. I appreciate the time. I wish you both the best of luck as well. And I hope you keep growing the podcast.
Thank you, John. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the My Accountant Handles That podcast. We try to post podcasts every single week with awesome business owners like John. Thank you guys for listening to this one, and we'll catch you in the next one. Thanks for listening to the My Accountant Handles That podcast. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on LinkedIn at The Quantify Group for more awesome content related to running the financial side of your business. We'll talk to you in the next one.